on our way now to go to the beach, but like other places in the world where you can just spontaneously decide to put on a swimming costume and grab a beach bag, here we've had a security briefing. We're in a convoy. You can hear the siren. We have six guys in front with AK-47s and with three vehicles. This is a bulletproof Jeep. We have an armored roof. We have doors that I really think people are going to struggle to shoot through, or at least I hope so. And all of this just to take a quick trip to the beach to see a part of Somalia that more often than not doesn't make it into the mainstream press. Hello and welcome to this week's show from Somalia, a country many have either never heard of, heard only bad things about, or can't find on the map. Situated on the Horn of Africa, it has the longest coastline on the continent's mainland. The country is most famous for, wait for it, its poets. But unfortunately, years of civil war, foreign involvement and interference, most of it American, has left the country one of the poorest in the world. Almost 3 in 4 people live below the poverty line of $1.9 a day. International travel advisories warn you not to travel here due to armed conflict. And as you can hear behind me, the constant sound of UN helicopters keeping watch. There's an ongoing very high threat of terrorist attack and kidnappings and dangerous levels of violent crime. This is a sense of what it's like to visit as a foreigner or journalist. I've been here in the capital of Somali, Mogadishu, for several days now, and I can tell you that this is my first time to the country, and first impressions are that the people are extremely hospitable, extremely kind and gracious. Now, this was a former colony of both Italy and England. Italian's only really being spoken by the much older generation. Most people here do speak English, and if it's not a good English, there is a kind of smattering of English. I was hoping to show you a bit of the life in the streets of Mogadishu, but we are having to go everywhere with a 24/7 armed escort. We are not allowed to show the faces of the security guards that are with us all the time. The fact that I'm walking on the ground is extremely unusual. The security has given me a few minutes to do this report and then to get back into the vehicles. And that is because the government here is battling the Al-Shabaab militant group, which is an offshoot of Islamic State. The Somalis are facing the worst drought in history. It is very, very hot here. Only after arriving was I told that March and April are the hottest months, so better planning next time in that regard. But as you see, there are people on the street. There is some kind of life. All the women here are dressed in traditional clothing, and everywhere you go, people notice you because, of course, we look a bit strange and we look as if we're foreign. The hotel that we're staying in is actually an armed compound, and the way it works is that any time we want to leave this armed compound, we have to alert the security and they come with us. The compound itself is secured not only with armored personnel who are holding and using AK-47s, but there's also sandbags there, there's also cement, and all of that is meant to help you hide behind if there is some kind of shootout or provide some kind of protection. Everywhere we go, we have these local contractors with us. So here is a group of local contractors that have just driven past us. And we have the same. We usually have six guys in the vehicle in front, and then the rest of the team is in two vehicles following behind them. IEDs remains a concern. Anytime we step out of the vehicle is a concern. I'm already being given the sign right now that we've been out on the streets enough and it's time to get back in. But I am hoping to show you at least here where there is kind of more of a main street, a little bit of what life in this very, very poor African country looks like. I'm not sure if you can hear the muezzin, the call to prayer. This is a Muslim country. It is Sunni Muslim. It is regarded as Africa's most homogeneous population. 85% of people are ethnic Somalis. And then if we can just kind of pan around here, you can see a bit of life here. Again, I'm constantly surrounded by the security guards, and any kind of interview I want to do, any kind of
discussion has to be arranged. Okay, we're being asked not to show her on camera. People here also very camera shy. I do want to say that people here are very proud. It's a country that not many people go to, which is unfortunate, and it is because of the security situation. In fact, if we can just swing a little bit this way, we won't show you the woman, but I just want to show you here, like the barriers and the kind of security that is everywhere. For those of us who remember reporting in Iraq and those kind of countries, it brings back that kind of memory. This is a very dangerous country. There is a lot of security that's needed. But at the same time, it's unfortunate because it is a country that seems to have been forgotten. And my experiences here have been nothing but positive. But it wasn't always like this. For millennia, Somali's port connected traders across the Indian Ocean. In the 1800s, the country was colonized by Britain and Italy. And the famine of 1993 led the American military here. But what started as humanitarian relief soon led to one of the heaviest losses sustained by the American army in one battle, known as the Battle of Mogadishu. Years of civil war and lawlessness followed, lasting decades and virtually destroying the country's economy and infrastructure. In the last few years, the US has turned its attention to fighting local militia, known as Al-Shabaab, whose loyalties are tied back to clans and warlords. What years of absent government didn't achieve, the militants have provided, such as running their own schools, clinics, and collecting trash. The new internationally recognized government, while friendly with the US, was chosen by its own people and not installed by Washington. But Somalis have not forgotten America's contribution to their chaotic past.
Well, I think it's, you know, it's a mixed bag. You have some Somalis that support America and, you know, that are happy with their intervention, you know, in the fight against Al-Shabaab. But there are some that are, you know, quite skeptical and, you know, think that America are just opportunists looking to exploit Somalia. You know, because Somalia are, as a people, they are very, you know, wary of outsiders. But, you know, all in all, I think, you know, it's a mixed bag and the Somali people are, you know, they're on the fence. The US's aim initially was to help in famine relief with the UN. You know, at a time where Somalia was in the second year of its civil war and the country was in a state of disarray. Unfortunately, the mission, you know, took a different turn. It turned into a political thing, you know, where they wanted to snatch and grab and, you know, apprehend one of Somalia's biggest warlords in Aidid. This in turn led to the Battle of Mogadishu, which was a horrible loss of life on both sides. Currently, just a few minutes ago, we heard a very loud explosion, and I really do hope that nobody's hurt and, you know, that it's not devastating. But to assess the, you know, political situation, the political future of Somalia, this is a country that has been in war for the past 3 decades. It's a very gradual process to peace and stability. But, you know, with the current regime, there is a glimmer of hope in the darkness, because they are really, you know, taking the fight to Al-Shabaab. They're pushing them out of rural areas where they held for almost a decade. And, you know, with the current regime, you know, Al-Shabaab are on their heels and they're practically, you know, non-existent in central Somalia. So if, you know, the current regime carries on and on this trajectory, I think we have a lot to look forward to, and, you know, never give up hope.
You know, I think for me as a minister of humanitarian, my mandate is to advocate for the people to get the service. But my dream is to build capacity and, you know, for us to be more, instead of using all the money for emergency, to use some of that money in development, or, for example, in water assistance. Instead of providing water tracking all the time, we need to dig wells, we need to, you know, come up in a water reservation and other things. So we need to really to think about how we use the resources. Agencies are helping us, but it's the government who need to make those decisions. You know, on one hand, in the international community, and we are very thankful they have been supporting Somalia since 1991. There's a fatigue, and also there are other urgent needs in the world, such as Ukraine, that need this bigger support than Somalia. So a lot of support is going to Ukraine, but Somalia is smaller, much smaller than Ukraine. And I hope our donor community will be generous and consider Somalia exceptional because of the Al-Shabaab and because of the climate change that we are facing, the consequences disproportionately. You know, Somalia, we are facing problems that other countries are not facing. Al-Shabaab, you know, they control maybe in one third of the country. And the area they control is the production area and the areas rich with livestock. And they don't allow people to farm, they don't allow people to do whatever they want. So, in terms of economy, our production is going down year after year because of those tourist group. And climate change is very evident in Somalia than other parts of the world. So those are making our case more difficult.
Years of civil war have resulted in a Somali diaspora scattered across the world. Nearly 3 million live in neighboring Kenya. And while some of them arrived with money and set up businesses, many fled across the border as refugees. Our reporter, Nolovuyo Kunge, visits a community more than 5,000 kilometers from home.
The Somali refugee crisis is one of the most challenging mass displacement situations in the world. Over the last 30 years, hundreds of thousands of people have fled Somalia due to political instability and dangerous civil wars. Southern Africa is currently hosting over 100,000 registered Somali refugees, half of whom live in South Africa.
To go to Somalia at the moment, and so it's not the better life and it's not the peacefully. So I'm scared myself also. Yeah.
I decided first to come here. It's not in my plan. So I come to Kenya first. So from there, when they kill my brother, I decided to move to come this side.
Actually, I just ran away from too much problem in my country. Recently, they give us a good welcoming here. Everything is all right, but the problem we have here in Home Affairs is just like when we just try to get our babies, there is a really big difficulty.
Our kids are born here. They are safe here. But sometimes the thought of them growing up and realizing they're not South African hits me. Every day we see young and small Somalis being killed, even here in South Africa. But this country is way safer than Somalia. I appreciate everything about South Africa, how they treat us refugees and how they welcome our children at schools. But I get scared for them.
Actually, there, you know, you're thinking it's risky. You give birth, you don't know when the war started killing each other. Once you lose your kid, because I lose my family, so it's better, yeah.
Because Somalis have been displaced for generations, many Somali children have been born in refugee camps. Luckily for those in South Africa, they have a place to call home, even though challenges exist. Nolovuyo Kunge, RT, Pretoria.
It's not just conflict that Somalis have had to contend with. For more than 50 years, the country has faced multiple severe droughts. In 2011, more than 250,000 people died from famine. Not only has the country not had a chance to recover from that, but there's been no rain for the last 6 years. Tragically, experts agree that the current drought is the worst in recorded history. But from April, international agencies have decided to cut back on aid. Dr. Ibrahim Dagana Ali says that Western humanitarian assistance has always been a double-edged sword.
I believe it with the help of the Somalis themselves, we at the end, with the support of the international community, we will overcome this crisis and we will have a peaceful Somalia.
The humanitarian institutions, the donors, have been kind to Somalia, and they have been helping to Somalia. They have saved a lot of lives. when there's people, when there were people were dying, lack of food, lack of water, or floods, they were saving lives. However, sometimes the prescription or the approach that have been used can create a kind of dependence and misuse of resources. One of the examples, simple things that I could mention is that you give cash to people, what do you call it, unconditional cash. A farmer who's supposed to depend his farm for his lives, who has chicken, who have crops, who have cattle, goats, when he loses that thing, and if you teach him another way of life by giving cash, will not go back to the farm.
The government is working hard to reverse the situation and recently established the Somali Disaster Management Agency, SODMA, through which it coordinates all disaster-related incidents in the country. I spent some time on the ground with them. One of the major crises the Somali Disaster Management Agency, SODMA, is facing at the moment is trying to prevent what could potentially become the biggest genocide the world has ever seen. Current projection rates suggest as many as 9 million Somalis and 12 million more people from across East Africa could die from hunger in the coming months. SODMA has become the backbone of Somalia, approved by the cabinet after the government prioritized the urgent need to manage disasters and take care of people fleeing their homes because of famine and conflict. Aside from facilitating relief efforts from both local and international organizations, it focuses on helping communities build capacity to be able to feed themselves in future and manage disasters in their areas. The agency's credo is that humanitarian assistance should be free from politics, and it sends its people to the worst-hit areas to provide food, clothing, shelter, and support. You are familiar with the situation. When you come to a camp like this, what do you notice? What for you is important that you look at and you see?
These people, they need first their food, and they need to get their water, they need to get every basic need for life.
You think you can help all these people?
Already we can give them what we can. The government, they give them food, they give them also we give them some of like this, you can see. But why it's not enough of this, yeah. Full of enough.
Why do you give them this material?
It's only what we can get now. We cannot build them houses, we cannot build them toilets. Of course, the government is not enough. It's not have enough budget to establish.
What do they do for toilets?
They just go outside.
So there's two toilets here for 200 families.
As you can see.
The gap between hunger and resources is big, but SODMA is working to narrow it and create lasting food security. One day before we were due to travel with SODMA to southeast Somalia, Al-Shabaab killed 7 security personnel and injured 11 government officials in a bombing attack on the guest house where they were holding a conference.
We arranged our logistic team to airlift to evacuate that people here to Mogadishu. And then we prepared the Amplas, Medina and the Turkish hospital. There's a lot of people are getting a wound, but the security people are 10. So this 10 we are making to support to evacuate in Mogadishu.
This hospital is called Medin Hospital. It's a community hospital. It's functioning now after civil war and lasted 23 years. And it's mainly focusing in the trauma cases from the all the country. In the healthcare system in our country in the last 10 years, it's improving. And we believe, we can deal, before we used to, send the patient outside because it's not easy for us to manage and to do some operations in our country. Nowadays, we have the capacity to do all the stuff or different kinds of operation. And we believe that there is improvement going on in the health sector, but there's a gap of improvement.
Years of conflict undid generations of knowledge. A private local initiative funded by Somali money and supported by the government brings together generations of professionals to nurture homegrown talent. I caught up with the director of the Center for Leadership Development based in Mogadishu.
When it comes to writings and studies, that has been in the domain of European scientists, starting from the colonial missionaries that are coming and the travelers and so on. But it was only in the 80s that we had produced our own intellectuals who were starting to write. So while we were on our way to establish that a credible academic capacity for the country, the war came, and the civil war came, and it collapsed. Now, it took us almost 20 years to have in the country again universities. Now we have plenty of them, and that's another thing. What we have lost in the civil war is not just generally the collapse of the government the destruction of all the properties that were owned by the government, but the books, the documents, the everything that was in the archives is also lost, and so the risk is that this national wealth of our intellectual heritage is at risk of being lost if it is not captured, and through our work. We try to transfer that knowledge and experience from that generation to the new generation. If you have lost those materials, the only people who remember and have experienced that life are the ones, the professionals who are living. So they have for us in Somalia much, much more value than in any other country. If you go now to ministries, you will find new professionals, young professionals, all of them have been trained in the country. And they have gone through the education while the bullets were still being fired, sometimes at them, sometimes at ending up in crossfire. No matter what happens in this country, whether it's done by international or other actors, it's our responsibility to take care of ourselves.
Somalia was the least visited country in the world last year, with less than 100 visitors. And it's really a pity because the country has a lot to offer, as you can see from the seafront behind me. There are a number of historical sites, beaches, waterfalls, mountain ranges, and national parks here. Yes, the economy is broken. 20 American dollars buys you this amount of Somali shillings. But people here do the best with what they have and are kind, hospitable, and friendly.
Thank you.
Well, that brings us to the end of this week's show. We hope you found it informative. If you missed last week, we were also in Somalia, but focusing on how the wheat and grain crisis has affected this part of the world. Many blame the West for instigating and protracting the Russia-Ukraine conflict that caused it. Next week, we explore the decolonization of education in Africa. If this is something close to your heart, we'd love to hear from you, as we're always on the search for new ideas and input. You can always catch us on the social media handles that you see on your screen. So for myself and the team, from another side of the Somalia story that too often is neglected by the mainstream press, from a sunny and sun-filled Somalia, we bid you farewell.